So I've made the announcements, and what we are going to do today is the time dynamics, and we are going to learn about the time evolution operators, properties, what kind of evolutionary equation it follows, and then how can we solve for three different cases, like where the Hamiltonian is independent. That's the most common one in the textbooks. The other ones are the time dependent. These are less common, but I feel they are mostly used in research when you are doing solving problems. These are the more commonly used ones. And then we're going to talk about the time evolution of state cats. So, which means that today we are going to cover something called Schrodinger picture. We're going to talk about stationary states and then how time evolution of observable it looks like in Schrodinger equation, Schrodinger picture. So we are mostly going to, I'm sorry about the spelling mistake. Okay, so we are going to mostly cover Schrodinger picture today. And for some of you, I think it's going to sound familiar, but the survey which I took before your classes started off, I think more than 60 to 70% are not very well familiar with this approach. Like they have heard it, they have used it, but they are not confident. So I'm going to start with the fact that whatever we did, operator. So in kinematics, like quantum mechanics or any kind of mechanics can be divided into two parts. Like first is the kinematics part where you talk about the description of the system. In quantum kinematics, you talk about the states and observables of the system, right? In dynamics, you mostly talk about how states or the observables, they evolve in time. So it's the evolution which we talk about, and we can do it in any kind of differential equation. And one of the most common way to do it in a differential form is the Schrodinger equation, which we already are familiar with. So this is the time dependent Schrodinger equation, which tells you the, so there was another feedback that I should use stick to the same notation. So I'm going to stick to this notation throughout the lecture. This is going to give me state gets. And I'm going to use these as the basis of these state gets, okay? Basis gets, okay? So, yeah, I'm going to stick to this throughout the lecture. That was a nice suggestion. Yeah, thank you so much for that. So this is the Schrodinger equation. It's a differential equation which tells us how the state gets are going to evolve in time. We could alternatively talk about an operator which relates my state gets at, let's say, some earlier time t naught and state get at new time t, and call this operator as U operator, which connects the two states at two different times. Okay, so this operator we are going to call as the time evolution operator, and basically what it does the same thing which Schrodinger equation does, kind of tells us how the state is going to evolve. And these time evolution operators or U's, they should follow some kind of properties. So we cannot choose them randomly. They have to follow something, some peculiar properties. One is the fact that they should be unitary, okay? And why they should be unitary? Because the state's norm is conserved. So if I say the norm is one or it's normalized, it means that if at time t naught, the norm is one, at a later time it is conserved, it's same, and it should be given by this. And if cats evolve like this, I forgot to write that the brass should evolve like, So these are the U daggers. Okay. And if that's happening, of course, U should be unity operator. So this should be equal to identity. Okay. So this is one condition for these time evolution operators, that they should always be unitary. They are also composite, and composition property means that they are kind of, we can see the time evolution as a continuous process. So if there's a state at time t2 and it's related to a state at time t1 by a unitary operator, and this in turn is related to the state ket at t0, I could simply say that going from evolving my system from t2 to t1 and then t1 to t0 will be equivalent to evolving it from t2 to t0. And this property of composition for these operators, it has a direct consequence, which is time reversal. And it gives me a very important property for these operators. And this time reversal says that if I'm evolving a system from t2 to t1, and then taking it back from t1 to t2, something like this, this should bring the system back to the same point, and it should mean that I have kind of done no unitary transformation. So this is identity. And okay, so I'll stop using OneNote and I'll switch to the Zoom board. I was just giving it a try, maybe hoping that it works today. Okay. So time reversal would mean that this is equal to the, is like almost taking inverse of this, okay? And from my unitary property, I know that its identity, which means that U inverse of T naught T is nothing but U dagger T naught T. If I can substitute it here and say that so this is something which I'm going to use further, and I'm going to box it. All right. Now, since I said that the role which U plays is almost similar to what Schrodinger equation does. So Schrodinger equation tells me about the time evolution of my state kets. So there has to be some relation between the Hamiltonian and the unitary operator, which we are just talking about, right? Because for Schrodinger equation, it's the Hamiltonian which evolves the system. And in this case, we are saying that this unitary operator evolves the system. So there has to be a relation between both. And let's see if we can find out that relation. We know that Schrodinger equation is nothing but the time derivative of my state. And if from my definition of the state, which we wrote as Now, if I take derivative of my equation here, then it's going to somehow represent the Schrodinger equation, right? So if I take this derivative or differentiate it with respect to time, I'll find the equation like this. And since my state ket at t0 is kind of stationary, it's a constant, so I'm not taking time derivative of it. And I can write this as alpha t, okay? So, and I just now said that u at t naught is related to this unitary operation by reversing time t naught and t. I can write it by using the above equation like this. Now, if I multiply both sides by it, this is something similar to my Schrodinger equation if this quantity here is the Hamiltonian, right? Do you agree with this fact? It's a similar looking equation to Schrodinger equation. If the relation between my Hamiltonian and the unitary operators, which we just defined as this. Okay, so now as an exercise, can you all prove that this operator here is Hermitian? So the property for Hermitian operators is like Hamiltonian is a Hermitian operator. Can you just quickly prove? I'll give you 2-3 minutes, and maybe the starting point should be the fact that U's are my unitary operators. So this should be your starting point. Using this relation, can you prove that this quantity is a Hermitian? You are free to discuss and then solve this. Yep.
That's what I was thinking. I would assume so. Would you also need to because you want to get back to this.
No, how do you just
because do that? The differential equation that defines you from the differential equation.
Oh, sure. And then that cancels
the negative by that comes from. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I
disappears.
I think it should work out in a way that that thing comes back.
I haven't done that. Well, of course it works out.
Just let me know when you're ready with the solution. But yeah, this is the hint. You should start with this and then take a derivative.
You don't need to transform.
So I have a solution here. U dot U dagger is anti-Hermitian, right? And since if it's anti-Hermitian, what this iota does, it gives an extra sign when you take an adjoint. So if U dot U dagger is anti-Hermitian, iota U dot U dagger should be a Hermitian operator. Okay. So this is an Hermitian operator and it can represent Hamiltonian of our system. Okay. Things are fine, like they're slow and smooth till here. Whatever we have found here is that we have a unitary time evolutionary operator, which makes our life easy. It's almost working like a Schrodinger equation, but in Schrodinger equation, I have to solve a differential equation every time to find my psi at a different time, right? There's a different Schrodinger equation, differential equation for a different psi at a different time. But if I can find out these time evolution operators, which relate these states at different times, it's much easier to work with these U's to find the time evolution of my state vectors, right? So I just, if I have the form for these, I can just operate it on any of the states and then find the state at a later time. So my aim should be finding a solution for my time evolution operator. And I just now found out the time evolution equation for U. So we just now saw that U, they follow this kind of differential equation. So iota H U dot is equal to something of Schrodinger equation kind. Like if I multiply on both the sides by alphas, it looks much like a Schrodinger equation, okay? But Schrodinger equation is my time evolution for these states. And this equation is giving me a solution for the unitary operators, okay? So what my aim is, I need to find the solutions for these U's using this differential operators, okay? So let us find the solution of my time evolution operator. Is the aim clear? Like what we are trying to do?
Wait, sorry, can you repeat it one more time?
Okay. What we are trying to do, see, my life becomes much easier if I know this. Because if I know this and I know the starting initial state, I can calculate a state at any later time t. So what I'm trying to do is, I'm just trying to find a solution of u using the equation we just found out, that u follows this differential equation. That's all we are trying to do. And we are going to do it for three different cases. So the three different cases would be Hamiltonian is time independent, Hamiltonian is time dependent, and Hamiltonian is time dependent. And both these cases are different because in first case, Hamiltonian at different times is not going to commute. So this is going to commute, and for this, Hamiltonian at different time is going to come in. So I'm going to give examples of each and then try to make how can you visualize them physically, okay? So we're going to find the solution of this equation for three different cases.
Sorry, I didn't understand the second and the third. What was the difference between the second and third cases?
Actually there are two cases only, but there's sub cases of the second case, okay? So second case is that Hamiltonian is time dependent, but I'm subdividing that time dependence into two parts. First case is that Hamiltonians at different times, like T naught and T, they commute. And the second sub case is that Hamiltonian at two different times, like t naught and t, they do not commute. Okay, so like for example, you can think of this time independent case, you can think of as a spin in a time independent magnetic field. So in that case, your Hamiltonian is not time dependent. For a time dependent case, you can think of a spin which is kept in a time dependent magnetic field. So it's varying with time, the magnetic field. And if I say that the Hamiltonians at different times, they commute, it would mean that magnetic field is not changing its direction, okay? But for the case where magnetic field is dependent on time, but it's changing its direction at different times, in that case, it would mean that Hamiltonian at two different times, they don't commute. Like, for example, I have magnetic field in x direction at time t0, and magnetic field in y direction at time t. Of course, since Sx and Sy, they do not commute, so this does not commute. This case is an example of the third case which we just talked about. So this is third case, this is second case, and time dependent is the first, time independent is the first case. Is this clear?
I have a question. So time evolution relation for the U operator, will it also hold for systems that do not follow Schrodinger equation? For example, Klein-Gordon, maybe?
I think this is for the, Klein-Gordon is for the relativistic equations, and I don't think this, we have to have a different version of this equation for relativistic cases. So this is for the non-relativistic case. We'll definitely need a different version of this equation. There might be some equation similar to this, but not exactly this one for the Klein-Gordon version. Is that fine?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, the same equation is not going to, yeah.
Does the third case, is that the mm-hmm. most general case, and can we use it to solve the first two cases?
Yes.
Okay.
You are absolutely right. And we probably are going to show that as well. Yes.
Okay.
So you're right on track. Okay. So let's first go through the easy case where the Hamiltonian is time independent. Okay. And I just gave an example, like you can think of a spin which is kept in a magnetic field which does not change with time. Okay. So I'm trying to find a solution of this equation here. And if, again, I'm going to simplify the picture and I say that H and U's are numbers, okay? Let's suppose. If H and U's are numbers, then what could have been the most obvious solution for this differential equation? You can just solve it by, like there are a number of ways to solve these differential equations. I'll probably take an integration and then solve it. So what should be the solution for U if U, H and U's were just numbers?
On IH bar times H.
Yes. Right. Just solving this differential equation will give you a solution of this kind. Now, we know that H and U's are not numbers in quantum mechanics. They are operators for maybe matrices. So we need to come up with some kind of notation for exponentials where I'm taking an exponential of a matrix. So H is a matrix here. And what I'm going to assume is that, let's say that the exponential of a matrix can be defined in the same way like we do for the exponential of numbers using Taylor's expansion. And I'm assuming that it'll converge. So Taylor expansion of any number, of any exponential can be written like this. And I'll see that if this definition fits for my definition of H and H being a Hermitian, okay? So this is true for if H is a number, but let's see if it's also true if H is a matrix, okay? So if I say H is a time independent quantity, all Hamiltonians are going to commute with each other because it's just a matrix, it's a constant matrix, right? So in that case, this relation is going to hold true even if H is a matrix. And this equation here is also a solution to our differential equation of this kind, which I can just prove here. So if I take time derivative of my U and then multiplied by iota H, I'll get something like, so n is equal to 1, here it's 0 to infinity. So I'm just taking time derivative of this quantity here. And now if I rename, and there's going to be a H here as well. And maybe I can just. Just take time derivative, very simple. And this will be minus I over cross. And if I just rename N minus one as M, what I get here is, again, U, and my equation becomes something like what we started with, okay? So yes, U is a solution of my required equation if U's are just constant matrices, okay? So U is a solution. So this is a solution of my differential equation. Now, let's come up with the second case where my H is time dependent. And if time is, if a Hamiltonian is time dependent, in that case, if I'm treating this as numbers, then my solution for U would simply become, so second case would be H is time dependent. So in that case, my differential equation I'm trying to solve is this. And my most obvious solution for this equation would be now not just H, but since H is time dependent, an integral over H. Okay. Now let's again see if this equation here satisfies my original time evolutionary equation or not. So again, if I take time derivative of this quantity, so I'm skipping few of the steps, mathematical steps here. And this is just going to give me H of t, okay? Now, if my Hamiltonian, they commute, so H and HT prime, they commute, I could bring this H on the left-hand side of the equation because that's what I want. I want a relation like this, right? So I want my H to be here somewhere on the left-hand side of the equation. So if HT prime and HT, they commute, I could bring this HT right on the front and I would see that yes, my my this form of u is actually a solution for a differential equation where h is time dependent. Are things clear till here?
Wait, sorry, can you explain what just happened again? So,
yeah, okay, sure. So I'm just trying to find out if this kind of u is a solution to my equation or not.
Right.
So if I expand u as a Taylor series expansion and then take a derivative of it, I'll have a derivative of this quantity to the power n, right? Because Taylor series has n, so it's n minus 1.
Yeah.
And then a derivative of the factor inside, which is this quantity. Right, because yeah, it's the chain rule. We call it, it's the chain rule. Like if you are taking derivative of
what does the commutation tell us? Like where are we doing the commutation?
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. So the commutation here tells me that I can change the order of H's here.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
So how does that help us solve for U?
Because H is appearing on the left, right-hand side, but I want it on the front because I want a equation looking like this, right? Where H is on the left side.
Sure.
Yeah, that's it. So if they commute, I can just bring it on the left-hand side of the equation.
The term n minus 1 and the derivative should be n because it's a derivative of the integral ht prime dt prime to the power of n. And so
yeah,
should be n, n minus 1.
Yes.
Within the exponent is n minus 1?
Yeah, that's
right. It's n. Yeah, he's correct. I'm skipping steps. I think maybe I should go back to the way where I was writing all the equations. Is that comfortable or? And all these steps are given in my lecture notes. So, yeah. But if you feel that I need to do the intermediate steps as well, I'm happy to do that. I don't mind doing it. Okay. Now, if this is clear, can I come to the case 3? Or do you want, maybe you can have 2 minutes to just look at what we did and then we'll discuss case 3. Maybe you have more questions for first two cases. Are we good to go? Can I start with the case 3? Or there are more questions with case 1 and 2?
I think we're all good now.
Are we good to go?
Yes.
Okay. So let's see what happens if H is time dependent and H at different times, they don't commute with each other, okay? So I cannot change the order in which they are appearing. So if I look at my u, which I said for time dependent Hamiltonian should have a solution of this kind. Can expand this exponential as 1 plus dt prime, ht prime. So this is the first term, 1 over 2 factorial. So first derivative of dt prime. And so on, like I have, it's a Taylor series expansion. Now, if I take time derivative of this series, you'll notice, so first term is zero and the time derivative of second term just gives me ht. The time derivative of second term is going to give me two terms, right? So it's the, I'm trying to take time derivative of two quantities. It should give me, I can write it in a much simpler way. So time derivative of this Hamiltonian, this integral here is going to give me ht, 0 to t, dt double prime. And this term also going to give me another term, which would be this term remains same. And now I take the derivative of this integral, which is going to give me h of t. So my problem is here. Now, since my Hamiltonian at different times, they don't commute, I cannot bring it to the left-hand side of the equation. So this approach is not going to work. I need to find a different approach to find out the solution for my differential equation. Okay, is this thing fine? So probably this is not the correct solution for my differential equation. This is not the correct solution for the differential equation when h is time dependent and the Hamiltonian at various times, they don't commute with each other. And I need to come up with a different solution for this. Okay,
sorry.
So the way, yeah.
In the expansion of the exponential, you just ignored minus I over h bar. I know it's not important, but.
Yes, I ignored it, but okay. So maybe I'm choosing a system of units where this is one. I was just trying to demonstrate the concept here that this is not the solution for my, but thank you. Thanks for, just makes me feel better that everyone is attentive.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but minus I over h bar should be one, I guess.
Yes. But yeah, it's good. I mean, it makes me feel happy that everyone is attentive. Just noticing all the mistakes I'm doing. Thank you so much. So let's approach it in a different way. What I want to do is, I want to solve a differential equation for u, which has this form. Now, this is going to be a general solution where case one, case two, everything fits in, okay? I'm just going to do is I'm going to integrate it to find the solution. And the way I'm going to integrate it, that I'll say u is equal to one minus iota by h, zero to t, ht prime, and maybe it's better if I write the times explicitly here. I'm choosing t0, t0 as to be zero, okay? So this is my, I can say, a very general solution to u here. But, and this, by the way, this one has been added just because of the fact that at t equal to t naught, this integral goes to zero, but u of t naught t should be one. So just to satisfy that boundary condition, I have added this one, okay? So this is a solution, but it's not a practical solution, I would say. because since u is a function of u itself, like we have seen such kind of equation in our perturbative expansion. And what we have to do is we have to make iterative expansions by like repetitive substitution of u's onto itself. So I have to substitute u again and then again and again, and I'm going to have a iterative solution to it. And if I write few of the terms for that iterative solution, my u will be so this is going to be my first term of that iterative solution. T prime, notice the integration limits. So this is very different from the Taylor series expansion of our exponential, which we were doing earlier. Okay, it's a very different equation. And more, and the nth term for this iterative solution would be
India, would those two integrals, would they be part of the first integral? Like, are they inside that integral or are they separate?
Yes. No, they are inside. So, yeah. This, because T prime is in this limit, right? So, this part of the integral. So, the detailed steps of how I have come up from the equation above to here, they are in my notes, okay? I'm just avoiding writing lengthy equations here, that's all. Okay, so this is the general solution for you, and in this solution, if you notice, since, like, let's see, for example, the second term here, in the second term, if you notice, T prime is always less than T, right? Because this is appearing here in the T prime. It's the integral within this 0 to T. So the correct order of my time evolution is that time goes from 0 to T prime, and then from T prime to T. So, and if I talk about this T double prime, the correct order would be 0 to T double prime appears first, then T prime, and then T, and so on. Like for this last term here, my correct order would be 0 Tn is. So these Hamiltonian here inside are time ordered.
Sorry, Bindi, I'm a bit confused. In the nth term, mm-hmm. like the last term, would the
yeah.
you have like inside the integral, you'd have ht prime, ht double prime, all the way to htn, but then would you not also have a u of tn? Like if you're going mm-hmm. to like truncate the expansion here, there would also be like a u of tn term in there, which you could then further expand to higher order.
Yes, I'm just writing it up to nth term. Yes, you're right. So there are going to be more terms. So this is the nth term I'm writing.
Okay.
Yeah, but there are going to be definitely like infinitely many terms for this because I'm just, and there has to be a u here. Yeah, okay.
I also have a question. Shouldn't there be like I over h in also n's up to the power n? Because that we have like, for example, for the first term, we have h of t first, and the I over h is also in first. It's the power first.
Yes. Your voice is cracking a bit. Like I can hear it as a different tone, up and down. Can you repeat the question?
Sorry. Should the bracket before the integral be to the power n in the last
no.
term? Why?
For nth term, it should be n minus 1. See, for the first term, it is zeroth power. So for second term, it is first power.
But you wrote.
For third term, it is.
But you wrote.
Is that the question?
Yeah. So, like, for example, in the first, like, okay, no, not first, but second term, you have like dt prime, like first tt first, right? And then h of t.
Yes.
And then this like bracket before the integral, it's also in the first power. Is multiplied once one time, and in the short term you have it the same, like you have t1 t2 and then I over h is also to the second power. So, and in the last term you have it like up to tn, but the bracket is n minus one.
Yeah, because when I'm taking integration over t prime, I need a new variable, right? So when I'm taking integration over t n minus 1, I need a new variable inside. So this is my limit for the t.
I think
and the integration is over.
I think they're saying that the number of primes on the dt, so in the third term, there's two primes. It's equal to the exponent on the minus I over h bar. Yeah. And so in the first term, we don't have any t primes because it's just one. The second term, we have one t prime, and the exponent is to the first power. The third term, we have two t primes, and the exponent is to the second power. So the number of primes matches the exponent. And so in the final term, we have to the n. So
I'll
put an n there.
I thought it was eloquent.
I'll have to cross check because I think maybe the complete expansion, you might be right. I have to check because when I did, because in my lecture notes also, I think it's n minus 1. I have to cross check this.
If you look at the number of h's and compare that to the exponent of minus I over h bar, it's pretty obvious. When you have n h's, you have to have n exponents of minus I over h bar.
Yeah.
So because you go to htn, you have to have minus I over h bar to the power of n.
Okay, so I'll keep n for now and I'm going to cross check because everyone has a majority that it should be n, right? Is that everyone says? Because I thought that for the nth term, it should be n minus 1.
It's not the nth term, it's the n plus 1th term because the first term is 1. So.
Okay. I think I agree intuitively, and I may have something done wrong in my lecture notes as well, but thanks for pointing it out. Okay, so yeah, so all these Hamiltonians are time ordered. And by time ordering, I mean that the Hamiltonian, which is on the left-hand side, it's happening at a later time as compared to the Hamiltonian on the right-hand side. Is that right? Okay, so if you look at these terms, what they actually mean is that there are a number of possible pathways. See, this operator here, what it does is it takes my state from t0 to t. And this expression here tells me that there are a number of possible pathways of doing that. I could directly go from I could draw it here. So there are a number of pathways, meaning that if I have this state to start with, I could directly go to psi t by operating h once, or maybe follow a different route that it first goes to alpha t prime and then it goes to alpha t. Or maybe have another kind of pathway that it goes to psi t double prime and then to psi t prime and then to psi t and so on and so forth. So the solution which we have found out for you here is known as the positive time ordered exponential. So maybe I can write it out. It's called the positive time ordered exponential. And it's also known as the Dyson series. Okay. In, it's one of its form. It's seen in a number of other places as well. And I think most of you are already familiar with this Dyson series. But at this stage, I would say that it's not obvious that this is a solution to my original equation or not. But if you see that if I take time derivative of this equation, I'm also going always going to end up with ht on the left-hand side, right? That was my aim because I wanted something, some equation looking like this. So if I take time derivative of this equation, since these integrals, they are time ordered, I'll always end up having hts on the left-hand side of the whatever stuff I have here, okay? So this is my general solution for Hamiltonians, especially which are time dependent and they, the time dependent Hamiltonians, they do not commute at different times. This is not equal to zero. And let's see if this is a general case. That was one of the suggestions in the start of the lecture. Like if this is also a solution for the case when my Hamiltonian, they also commute, okay? We can easily check that as well. So I think it's fine till here.
Yeah, everything's good.
Okay.
Although the Dyson series, if we truncate it, it's not an exact solution.
Yeah, it's not. So it's kind of, I visualize it mostly like a perturbative expansion, actually. It gives me similar thing because in perturbation also we have these transitions, right? So one transition or maybe an intermediate state and then transiting to the final state and so on. So yeah, it does not give us the exact solution if I truncate it at a point.
Is it ever useful to consider convergence of the series?
Is a way to consider the convergence of the series. For any series, I think convergence would be to see if the next term is contributing to, like in our work, when we try to see the convergence for equations to find a solution of our eigenvalue, what we do is we compare it with the previous term and then fix a convergence factor. And if our previous term is contributing less than that conversion factor which we have fixed, I would say the series is convergent. Does this make sense? So it depends on how much the next term is contributing.
Okay.
Is that, okay. Are you supposed to consider large n's for that? Because I think if for a limited n, it might not work. So if you take the proportion of, let's say, the ith term with the I plus oneth term, you might not, and the contribution might, for the I plus oneth term might be a little bit more, but in the limit that n goes to infinity, it might get less.
I agree, yes. So a clear picture would be including more terms, yes, I agree. So just including five terms and then seeing that if the ratio between the fourth and the fifth term is convergent or not might not give you a correct answer. But I don't know how many terms you'll have to include to actually see the convergence. Okay. Now let's see in my general solution for you, which was here, if I can write it. So what I want is to see if this general solution matches my equation for u here, okay? If does, then I would say that the general solution, it gives me the correct solution for the case where h and h at different times, they were commuting, okay? Because this was the solution for Hamiltonians at different times commuting. So if this general solution represents that exponential term here, I would say, yes, I'm on the right path, okay? Let's just look at the second term for now, because handling the n plus oneth term is quite complicated. I'm just going to look at the second term and then see if it represents the exponent or not, okay? How much time do I have? I have 15 minutes. I want to come to the Schrodinger equation. I'll just quickly go through it, but there's a PDF on time ordering in the lecture notes. It says time order, and it tells me that these terms here, can actually be written as, so I'm again skipping these vectors. Let me put that back. And note the integration's limit here, okay? That's the only difference here. So this is the this would have been my third term for the exponent, which was the solution for h time dependent, but h at different times commuting. And this is my general solution, the third term for the general solution where Hamiltonians at different times, it was not commuting, okay? I can come back to this part if I have time at the end of the lecture, but there's a PDF on the website, of the course where I explained that how these two terms are related, okay? So just note that I've changed the time of the integration here, okay? All right, so having said this, that expression here represents the general solution of my time evolution operator, and it represents this solution of the case where the Hamiltonians are commuting, and it also actually represents the case where Hamiltonian are time independent. In more general textbook problems, we usually start with the Schrodinger picture where Hamiltonian is not time dependent, okay? It's not that Schrodinger equation cannot handle time dependent Hamiltonians, but just imagining carrying out this integration here. So it's really, really complicated. One will not prefer using Schrodinger picture for time dependent Hamiltonians. And we have a very beautiful picture interaction called interaction picture, which handles these time dependent Hamiltonians in a better way, okay? So Schrodinger picture is mostly used for simple cases where Hamiltonian is not time dependent. And let's see how the state gets, they evolve in Schrodinger picture. So this time evolution operator, which we just defined, it's common for the Heisenberg interaction or Schrodinger picture. In Schrodinger picture and Heisenberg picture, the only difference is the way we talk about the time evolution. So if I talk about the observables associated with any operator Hermitian, because it's an observable, let's say A at time t naught, I can write this as, this is the expectation value of the operator. And at a later time, this expectation value, let's say it becomes this, because I say that ket vectors are evolving. And by definition, I could write this as now, if you see, I can study the time dependence of my observable in two different approaches. Because these observables have to be remain same, right? It doesn't matter which approach I'm using. I'm using Schrodinger, Heisenberg, or any other approach. These observables have to remain same. And this time dependence of observable can be studied by saying that my state gets are evolving in time and the operator are is not changing. So first approach would be saying that state gets are evolving in time. And A is independent of time. This is called Schrodinger picture. And approach second would be saying that state gets, they don't evolve with time. So they remain fixed, but my operator is evolving with time, okay? So this would be the Heisenberg picture. So let's look at the first approach, which is the Schrodinger picture. And if I represent my state ket in terms of a basis set, I want to see how my basis sets are going to evolve in time, okay? So, and these basis kets, they are my eigen kets as well, so they satisfy this equation. And in case of time independent Hamiltonians, our unitary operator can be defined as exponential minus iota h t over h cross. I can write that if at time t naught, this is my state ket, this is my state ket, at a later time, my state ket has evolved like this. Okay. Now, if these Hamiltonians are time independent, they are not going to affect these C coefficients here, which kind of give me the probability of finding my system in any of these state kets. But if they are time dependent, then these C's, they also depend on time, okay? So this is a C at time T naught. And the case where these Hamiltonian is time dependent and they change this probability of finding my state in any of these eigenkets, it changes with time. We are going to deal when we do the interaction pictures. So for now, I'm just simplifying this equation and writing it as CAT naughts and this exponential of minus iota HT by H cross with X on my base gets, okay? Now, since I know that my eigenkets, they follow this eigenvalue equation, I can simply write my equation as follows. So this is my state ket at a later instant of time. If I know my base kets or eigenkets, I can find out my state ket at a later time. If, so this is A I can write, if I know this eigenvalue equation here, okay? Okay, now these exponential, these coefficients here, as you see, they don't change with time if my Hamiltonian is time dependent. Time independent, a special case would arise, let's say if at time t naught, my system was not in superposition of all these eigenkets, but it was in one of these eigenkets, let's say at t naught, it was in one of the eigenkets. at a later time t, I could easily write my state to be this. And if you see, the probability that my system remains in these eigenkets, it's not changing with time, because if I take modulus of this square, this is nothing but one. Okay, so these states are called stationary states, where the probability of finding the system, it does not change with time. Like, for example, I'll probably give an example. That's one of the questions in your tutorial tomorrow. Like, you have spin in z direction, and then you apply magnetic field in z direction. So the Hamiltonian in that case is in z, like the magnetic field is in z direction, and your spin is also in z direction. So it's one of the eigenkets of your Hamiltonian. In that case, you'll see that your system, your spin does not change its direction. It always remain in the z direction. Okay. And there's one animation as well, which I've shared in the portal. Probably would like to see that, where if you apply magnetic field in the same direction as the direction of the spin will never change, which makes sense. But if my system was in superposition of these states, the situation is going to be different. Let's see how. Okay.
I'm sorry, I must skip the beat here, but are you talking about the Hamiltonian that is not dependent on t? This was time independent.
Yes. Okay. Time independent. We're talking about time independent Hamiltonian. Yes.
Sorry, Bindiya, could you clarify the notation, please? So the EA, is that the energy of the alpha state? And the CA coefficients, do you mean like CA prime? Or sorry, I'm just a bit confused.
So maybe this would help. Is that what you mean? So which notation? So these is EA primes are the eigenkets, which are the solution of this eigenvalue equation. Like these are the eigenfunctions of these eigenvalue equation with these eigenvalues.
Yeah, no, that.
And my.
Sorry, it's just that you pulled out like the factor of like e to the minus I EAT over H bar. So What's the EA? Is that the
It's the eigenvalue for this state ket. So maybe it's EA prime, I could say. Okay. So this factor here is exponential minus iota EA prime T by H cross.
Would this not be inside the summation over the A prime star? I guess is what I'm
Yeah, it has to be inside this. Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I tend to make these mistakes. And if I get a feedback that there are so many silly mistakes in lectures, I probably won't improve. I'm so sorry. Because this is something I know I do, and I try to improve this, but these small points, I just skip them. I don't know why. Yeah, I'm really sorry about that. Okay. So let's now calculate the expectation value for observables in Schrodinger picture. And first, I'm going to find the expectation value of these observables in using the fact that my system was in one of the eigenkets. Okay, so I'm trying to find this expectation value of any operator A, any operator B, and I say that if my system at time t naught was in one of these stationary states, at a later time, my eigenkets are going to evolve, like. And you see that my expectation value at a later time for stationary states, it does not change. And that's what the question in tutorial says, that if spin is in z direction and magnetic field is in z direction, the expectation value for Sz will be stationary. It will be, it won't change. But if my system was in superposition of all these eigenkets, then the situation is going to be different, because now if I find out the expectation value of my observable, I would say that at a later time, the expectation value would be this. And I can expand it in terms of basis sets.
Yeah, I don't think the whiteboard's updating.
Nope.
I'm sorry, I lost my connection. I've lost this thing on the whiteboard. Anyways, okay. So, and I'm going to skip one more step there. So if you see, if I'm trying to find the expectation value of B, if my initially my system was in not the stationary state, but a non-stationary state, which is superposition of these eigenkets, I would see that expectation value has terms which have these oscillatory, these oscillatory exponential terms here, okay? Maybe we can do one exercise before we finish. Maybe you can all do an exercise before we finish, just to see how we apply Schrodinger equation, Schrodinger picture for time evolution of the systems. Okay, I can give you a problem, because this is something which you are going to do in tutorial tomorrow. By the way, tomorrow's tutorial is not too lengthy, because I got a feedback that last tutorial was a little too long. Most of them, you could not complete the third question. So this tutorial, I've tried to make it short. There are simple questions, a little conceptual one. The mathematical details of this question are too trivial for you all. You are already very smart, like pointing all those small mistakes I've been making. But what I want you to learn from those tutorial is the physical implication of those problems, like what you actually learned, what's happening in the system. And if you finish that tutorial before 1.5 hours, I would like you to complete your third question, which you were not able to do for tutorial one. That's the purpose of making it a little shorter, okay? So that you can work on the problem which you could not complete last time. So probably just to end, before ending, I would like to give you a small problem to work with, and then we can have a discussion if time allows. Let's say at time t naught, my system is in, maybe this is a harmonic oscillator, let's say. Okay. So we know the eigenvalues, and these are the eigenfunctions for my harmonic oscillators. Zero here means that it's in n is equal to zero state. So it has energy h cross omega by two. And for n is equal to 1 state is the next excited state, and it has the corresponding energy. Okay, so maybe if I say that I know the system at time t naught is in this state, can you find out what would be the state at a later time t? So just apply the Schrodinger equation and assume that the Hamiltonian is time independent. Okay. So find psi t using time evolution operator. And assume that H is time independent. So this is just the energy values which you need in order to find the. So once you have find these psi t's, can you also try to find the expectation values for these position operators in Schrodinger picture at time t? What would be nice be that if somebody does and then explains it to class, that would be a nice activity, maybe practice for you for your interviews. If we have a volunteer, that would be really nice.
Vindhya, am I audible?
Yes.
Can you give the expression for the position operator in terms of the ladder operators?
Okay, yeah, right. Even I have to recall them, but I think it's under root of H. Maybe some of you may remember it if I'm wrong. It's A. And I think it's A plus. Yeah. Does anyone remember the X operator in terms of the ladder operator, the exact expression?
It seems that about seems right, but I don't remember.
Maybe there's an I there.
Yeah. Okay, let me pull it out from, some book. It should be here somewhere. Just give me 1 second, Sukanya.
There should be I.
There should be I somewhere, yeah, because otherwise it's going to be.
No, that's right. It has I. Momentum is the one with the I.
I have to check. To somewhere. Yeah. I think it's correct. Yeah, I think this is the right question. Yes, yes, this is right. For momentum, there's a iota here.
Thank you.
Wait, what is the subscript S referring to?
Schrodinger.
Oh.
I
can anyone help me unshare the whiteboard? I've never used whiteboard on Zoom before. I want to see you all.
Yeah, there should be like a red stop sharing. Maybe if you like move your mouse to the top or the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know how to stop sharing screen, but I am unable to find anything for stop sharing with the whiteboard.
I think it'll be the same thing.
Oh, yeah, got it. Okay, yeah, thank you. Those who have done, if they can come up with an explanation for the class. Is there a board somewhere? Yeah, there is a board. That would be really nice if somebody could volunteer. And that's a very good, nice practice for you all.
Wait, sorry, I'm still getting it. I'm seeing my notes again.
Okay, maybe it's time and I'm still here for my office hours. Those who want to discuss the solution for the problem I just gave, I'm more than happy to discuss it, okay? Do you need help or you're good to go? Like, is everyone able to do it?
I got it, but I usually make tiny math mistakes when I'm rushing. Did anyone else get 2 cosine omega t? Am I missing a factor? Oh, maybe I'm missing a factor of a half cosine of omega t. I might have messed up some of the addition.
Do you want me to post the solution or discuss it in the lecture, what, or maybe right now? Right now, I don't think you must be, you want to leave.
Okay, I got square root h bar over 2 m omega times cosine of omega t.
I don't have the 2, but I have everything else.
Okay.
So
wait, what 2? Did I have a 2?
In the denominator?
Wasn't that from the square, wasn't that the factor in front of the x operator?
Oh, I didn't do my cosine properly.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, I did.
Wait a second.
I can share the solutions, but you'll get a cosine omega t kind of term for your exponential, for your...
I think we got it up to fudge factors.
Okay. Okay, I'll share the solution.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have a nice day. Bye.
You too.